RSVP today. WBLINC.org/DMV made.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey.
Redeem a full of college.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing. I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently sour for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to The Collision. This is Chuck Modiano. Without our co-host, Dave Zirin, without our co-host, Etan Thomas, but we're still here at your home for jazz and justice here at WPFW and WBAI in New York City. And Katia is going to be joining us, Katia Stitt. And then we're going to have a couple of guests as well. So we're going to talk about what happened yesterday. And the guests that we're going to have are local D.C. organizers, because yesterday was a huge day. It was a huge day. You might have heard about it. There's this guy, a war criminal, who was welcomed with a red carpet in Congress. And there was a shameful a red carpet that included 58 rounds of applause. 58 rounds of applause by the United States Congress co-signing genocide, funding genocide. I don't know if there's ever been a more disgusting moment than I've been a part of. And you're going to read a lot about that. We're going to hear about it. And we'll talk a little bit about Netanyahu's shameful speech and lies. But what we really want you to know is to know what was going on in D.C. There were protests all day yesterday in D.C. There were actions all day, starting at 8 a.m., ending after midnight, one after another. And we want to give you some of what you may not hear. So we're going to have a couple of local organizers who are here. Shy Huck, a local D.C. organizer east of the river, has been in these streets this whole time since October and long before. On the bottom of the hour, we're going to have another organizer, Hannah from Maryland of Palestine, has been covering Free Palestine rallies for a year, local D.C. organizer. Join us. We're going to have a great conversation today and hear what was you might not know about what was happening in D.C. So I want to see you. Katia Shai, are you here?
I am. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Listen, Shai, it is great. It is great to have you. You've been out there. We see each other out there, you know, for months on end. But, you know, yesterday we're out there. We're going to, you know, the common theme was arrest Netanyahu. Arrest Netanyahu. I mean, this isn't a hard one. It is not a hard one. Right. We see the pictures. I mean, what are you, before anything else, what is your reaction when you hear the United States government is welcoming Bibi Netanyahu with a red carpet? How do you feel about that?
I think I'm not alone in feeling anger at the forefront. I feel so grateful to be tapped into the organizing community that has been on the streets really fighting for a ceasefire, for action on the genocide that's ongoing. And yesterday, I think, was a great catharsis for that anger. That anger is really what I'm feeling. It has been over 9 months. There have been so many moments in which our community has given our leaders an opportunity to speak to the will of the majority, and yet here we are. Anger, frustration, and truly a sense of bewilderment. You know, it's kind of like you look around at the people you shared your life with and think, how is this our new normal? How is this okay?
How is this possible?
Is it possible? Yeah, I think that's a great edit. It's not okay. How are you okay with this thing that is decidedly not okay? When the ICJ is telling us that, yes, he is a war criminal, when most countries, even some of the staunchest supporters of Israel, have said that they would arrest him, how do we then end up spitting out a speech filled with lies and given multiple standing ovations? That is mind-boggling to me, and it's really painful. Knowing how much their time, all the organizers, it's not like the majority of them have 9-to-5s, have families, have other obligations, and they put it all aside to show up to disrupt this man. So yesterday, a lot of the protests, while it was about arresting Netanyahu, handing down that citizen's arrest, across the board, there's this desire to continue to disrupt, to make it as difficult as possible outside of the mainstream pathways that he has to connect with D.C. We're sort of providing him the real D.C. welcome.
That's right.
How we really feel about him being here.
You know, and the real D.C. was really something yesterday. I'm going to give folks like sort of a quick rundown. It's not like one, two protests. We start at the top of the morning. I think the rest started very early at 10.
Yes.
But there was a people who are coming all around the country, and there were thousands in D.C. on a Wednesday in the day, and there were people surrounding the Capitol, drawing a red line around the Capitol. Biden famously said he would draw a red line at Rafah, and that never happened. Mm-hmm. We have spoken about that. But there were six actions blocking roads early in the morning around the Capitol as well. So there were many arrests made, and people trying to disrupt what was happening with Netanyahu being invited, with Netanyahu getting that red carpet. That was the morning. And then when you move later on, and there was the larger main protest, which began at 11, it went to about 11 to 1. And around 1 o'clock when the march started, so folks know, it was cut off. The police came in and cut the march off. They wouldn't let people go. And then they came out with generous pepper spray. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to go to Breakthrough News, who were there, because I interviewed about four people who were pepper sprayed directly, media, everyone, and the police were out to start things. If you didn't understand that from some of the tweets that were going out, that the D.C. police were out to start some trouble, it was really clear. Later on, as people moved to Union Station, there was more pepper spraying. That came after effigy of Bibi Netanyahu being burned. There was a flag that was burned, and then there was graffiti that apparently the internet is horrified at various graffiti that was going on, more than the 186,000 yeah. Palestinians who have died. And then, I'm giving everyone a rundown so I get this out of the way, and then we had, and I want you to speak to this, we had two more protests. That one was Go Go for Gaza. That starts at 4. And that's where I really wanted you on to speak to this Go-Go for Gaza, which was incredible. And then you were at the evening protest, which was the third night of not letting Bibi sleep at his Watergate hotel and a noise demonstration and that back end. And most people don't know about that back end. And you were at both in the back end. So I wanted to give everyone a rundown. Okay, and as I give everyone a rundown, I'm going to ask you in a minute about your feelings, particularly about the Go-Go for Gaza, which was good. But Katia, you are with us as well, and you're with us as well. How are you, Katia?
I am great, Chuck, and it's great to be with you. And Shai, thank you for joining us. Yesterday was an extraordinary day in D.C., an extraordinary I think for those standing up for Palestine in the best of ways, because as hard as the police tried, and, you know, the New York police also were in town, and they started the day before in trying to repress people and show their solidarity with D.C. police and all. And even in the face of all of this, our people, our community, and really the global community that got here to D.C., stood up and said no to a war criminal, no to, frankly, a genocidal maniac. So in that way, it was a proud day. It was also a very disturbing day in terms of the numbers of people that were attacked by the police. And as you said, no provocation, simply to stop the protests, simply to stand with the state. They decided to brutalize people. And I'll leave it there. So I'm here for you if you need me, Chuck.
they sure did. Are you DZ or are you a Ton today?
I'm always DZ. With all due respect, I'm always DZ. Always DZ.
That's right.
Not quite
so
as eloquent,
you know what? I mean, there's a lot of feelings here, and we, you know, want to bring a local organizer mentality. So Shai, your thoughts on the day's protests, and particularly the undercovered, I think, and I'm going to try to put some video out about it today, the Go-Go for Gaza protest that sort of went unnoticed. Well, so what are your thoughts on the day and that protest?
Man, I have so many thoughts. I really want to echo those sentiments. I think there's a sense of pride when we see our community out and sort of becoming physically present. And in the face of something that is really scary. It was, according to WUSA 9, it was over 200 NYPD officers that were deployed. And speaking to some of the students that got pepper sprayed, there's a dude I met at the encampment who told me he got a full body pepper spray. There's no reason for that. I mean, this is a public radio show, so I won't share everything he said, but sensitive parts of his body were impacted by this action. And it sounds, I feel like when you're talking about it one-on-one, you can kind of laugh about it, but then get to this larger picture. Why is a New York police officer coming and brutalizing our students? And now this one of the students has to go to Brooklyn because it was an NYPD officer who he engaged with. So not only did they come and brutalize us in the district, but then the aftermath forces labor for these students to have to make their way up when they might not have transportation or the time to do so. So I just want to say that it was really unsurprising but just disappointing to see the increased police. And it was a little bit in part due to people not in D.C. but communities surrounding who circulated petitions for increased policing. So just as much as we are doing the work to organize to kind of counter that sort of sentiment, those people are out there doing that. For Go-Go for Gaza, they have our issue to the march in the sense that we are out here trying to organize around bringing people together, and it is our right to assemble, it's our right to free speech, and they were not able to go to their original spot outside of Union Station. They had to move it over to Mass and G, which I think was the first step of what made it more difficult for it to be covered. But then also Go-Go for Gaza is a really interesting initiative. It raises attention and awareness to the fact. I read this in a grassroots DC article, and Chuck, I know I told you about this, but it really changed my life. I live in Ward 7, and they described Ward 7 and Ward 8 essentially like an open-air prison with the amount of police activity and monitoring that's available. I spoke to someone at GoGo for Gaza who had been a former council member who shared that the majority of young children east of the river don't actually ever make it across the river. They don't get to go to the museums. They don't get to go and experience mall. All of these things that we all say are so DC. And so there are two different lives being lived here in Washington, and they are distinctly connected to the struggle we see going on with Palestinian freedom, because it's the same core concepts of persons that are continuously treated as subhuman or lesser than, but then being told that they have equivalent citizenship because they're a DC resident. They've got a DC license. They can go to their local rec center. They can go to their park. They have these things. But what they're not focused on is the fact that we have created, through our increased militarization of our police force and our leaving behind, our defunding of these programs, we've created a really unsafe space for the most vulnerable folks in our community. GoGo for Gaza helped bring attention to that connection. And what I love is that it incorporates GoGo. And GoGo is the sound of rebellion. It's the sound of resistance here in D.C. So the audience reflects that. It reflects the nature of GoGo being something so related to the soul of Black D.C., of Chocolate City. And it really centers that experience. So if you do see them going again, and I know that they want to, it would be worth folks who haven't yet experienced it to come and see and hear. One of the things that shocked me was when the MC said, raise your hands if you know someone who has been shot and killed. And at other protests, it might be a smattering of folks, particularly the Palestinian diaspora. But when you're at GoGo for Gaza, it's the majority of the audience, you know?
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you a question. It was Kamone Freeman who was there, who made that remark, and he's actually running for Congress. Kamone Freeman said, raise mm-hmm. your hand. Everyone's hands raised. You know, that there's a connection to Gaza there, and I'm going to want to get our connoisseur, musical connoisseur, Katia, in a second to comment, but I have to have a follow-up. When you say the words open air prison, we know how that resonates. And I, as when you said that to me, it was the first time I've heard that, you know, that article that you're speaking of. But I think we want to pull into that. What are some of the social dynamics that have created this sort of open air prison in DC? Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Absolutely. Racist development policies. If you, Anacostia Museum, I think it's Anacostia Community Museum, is a Smithsonian, but it's related to DC history. Learn about the racist history of displacement, of the highway development and how they went through predominantly Black neighborhoods and cut through all of the wealth, all of the social status. Everything has been engineered historically in D.C. to displace and push out the native Washingtonian community, which, again, largely Black residents. And for me, it's that. It is a lack of investment in community-minded infrastructure on our side. It's a clear desire to prevent connectivity through transportation. And I say this because I feel this is someone who started organizing really deeply with people who are working with Palestinian Solidarity, and a lot of them are Ward 3, Ward 2. I always make my way over because I have the privilege of having a car and having the time to do so. My neighbors don't. It is something you can't quite articulate until you've experienced it. And the isolation I feel as someone privileged, as a gentrifier who has entered the space, tells me that the lived experience for my neighbors who didn't get to choose is that much worse. So just constantly getting left behind, constantly being asked to come to events west of the river, but never really getting that same programming on their side. There are so many, I don't want to discount. There are amazing community-based orgs that are doing work, but I think all of us, when I speak to them, are saying, how can we continue to bridge this gap, because our government is not going to do it for us. Mayor Bowser is not going to do it for us. Our council is not going to do it for us. So how do we bridge that as a community? Does that make sense?
You know, it makes sense. It's a big bridge that we have to build and figure that out. You know, you mentioned GoGo as a form of resistance. I'm not gonna Katia, who is
Katia, can you speak to some of those connections, whether your roots in jazz and how you see go-go as part of the city?
Well, I grew up with go-go. My brother was at all the go-go's. And, you know, it was this, it is still this music that is celebrated throughout the city. It always has been. It's always been a form of resistance. We have to remember that after they took music classes out of the schools, you know, people will be resourceful and creative, and certainly young people and young Black people. And that's just what happened. So you find them using buckets and other things. I mean, it has certainly evolved from the beginning, but, you know, you find young people getting together using buckets, making music, because that is what they had. And music is always, in my opinion, most of the time, especially when it's indigenous, especially comes from the ground up, becomes a form of resistance. And that is what go-go has been. And to your guest's point, Shay's point about how the city has left consistently Ward 7 and 8 behind. And not only that, now pushing out those residents because of gentrification. At one point in time, they could go to Prince George's County. Sometimes you could go to Montgomery County. But as we see, the residents, our poorest and most vulnerable residents, are being pushed further and further out, which means that, right, the housing that they once had no longer available to them, the job that they once had in the city, very difficult to get to, especially if you're on public transportation, if you live an hour, 2 hours even away, because that's what you can afford. It has always been this kind of systemic racism that has caused a lot of the problems. And when you talk about Ward 7 and 8 being an open-air prison, a lot of these things are due to racial and economic, in fact, most due to racial and economic disparity. If you look at the quality of the schools, historically, right? At one point, there were great schools in all of the wards, including 7 and 8. But after the riots, after there was white flight, and then gentrification again, we see where the resources go. They don't go to the young people who have so much talent, and there's so much hope and dignity happening, and so much creativity happening in Ward 7 and 8. These are young people that are doing things in spite of, as well as activists. You know, we have Herod's Wildest Dreams coming out of there. We have other organizations coming out of there doing mutual aid work and helping each other, not relying on the government. But the reality is that there is still disparity in how the local government and the federal government look at the city and deal with the city. And when you talk about mass incarceration, who are the hardest hit? Those living in Ward 7 and 8. Historically, that has always been. And so it's going to take, I mean, the beautiful thing about this movement around Palestine and a movement to stop this genocide and to really restore Palestine for the Palestinian people is that it has raised awareness on so many other levels. You know, Occupy tried to do that. The Occupy Wall Street, those of us who are old enough to remember that, the Occupy Wall Street movement began to do that. But this movement...
Well, it wasn't that long ago, Katia.
Well, I know, but it seems like an eternity, but it wasn't that long ago. Yeah. But that began to make connections because, you know, out of that we had Occupy the Hood. And what's happening in Ward 7 and 8, we should say, is not unique to D.C., right? It's every major city with a concentration of a Black, sometimes poor population. This is what happens over and over, and what we see happening over and over again, where you're talking about New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, you know, Oakland. You can see the same things in place: racial disparity, economic inequities, leading to the kind of situation that we see in Ward 7 and 8, and frankly, in poor communities all around the Beltway as well. You know, I live in Tacoma Park, but right next to me is Langley Park, for instance, a large immigrant community. And the disparities that we see there are not the ones we see in Tacoma Park. You know what I mean? So there has to be, and again, I think this is what this movement has done, the uncovering or the shedding sunlight on systems of oppression, of occupation, of repression that are no longer working for us. And finally, we are coming together to say it doesn't work for any of us, whether we're talking about Palestine or Ward 7 or Houston, Texas, or, you know, anywhere in the world, Bangladesh, wherever it is, wherever injustice is, it's no longer working for us, and the people are prepared to take it on and to change it.
Wow. Yes. The people are prepared to take it on. Shai, you're a local organizer. Are you prepared to take it on? Could you give us a way forward, a path forward? How do we take it on?
Yes, absolutely. So I just also, everything you are spitting is straight fire. And the Bangladeshi revolution is one that's really interesting to watch because it is to actually the protests. A lot of people cite as some danger that was brought to a high school student, and his friends are the ones that ultimately led this larger revolution. I think it is revolutionary to care about your community deeply. So I have a few opportunities that I like to share with people to get involved because I have a variety of people in my life who I love and care about dearly who are not necessarily going to be the frontline noisemakers bringing a pot or a pan to the Watergate, which is very cathartic, but I also want to leave space in the movement for those who don't have that skill set. I keep saying to people, regardless of who gets into office in November, D.C. is in trouble in November. D.C. home rule is constantly being pushed against. And so we need to take care of our communities. So showing up also includes continuing to raise awareness and not letting our community forget about the ongoing genocide happening in Palestine, about the suffering that ultimately we are responsible for as U.S. citizens, but to also find who is bridging those gaps that we talked about, entertainment gaps, food gaps, housing gaps. There's amazing short-term housing solutions. Again, needing support, needing volunteers from the community. I would say that if you treat that as the cornerstone of your practice, and for me, I'm into collective liberation, right? I'm not just about Palestinian freedom, because Palestinian freedom without addressing the larger constructs that caused the issue we're seeing, to me, feels a little backwards. So truly finding one group in your community that's doing something good and figuring out one way you can support it is a concrete way to get involved. Another way that is, I think, severely underlooked but helpful is being the educator in your community. So if you're someone who's a voracious reader, that's me. I know all this information because I don't have any friends and I just sit at home reading. But then I can share this information and I become useful to the movement, again, without it necessarily having to be me being the disruptor, me being the one yelling in a police officer's face, which valid. A lot of the time, just saying. I think that's it. That's the big one. And then from there, you can either autonomously organize. You can, there's an idea called an affinity group where you find a small collection of trusted individuals that you take on actions with, whether it's that you ladder into these larger actions like yesterday's citizens' arrest, or if it's something like your wheat pasting, which is completely legal if you go by the rules, by the way, and an excellent form of subversive like art protest. So making a big case for that as well. There are lots of existing flyers. Flyers for Palestine is an entire database that there are a bunch of free designs you can print out. Wheat paste is super easy to make, and it's a great way to get some of that grief and anger I talked about earlier out by doing an art project that ultimately is raising awareness. Policy has been hard for me because I've been feeling really let down by the processes in our local government, but to be beat down by it doesn't mean that there's not use in re-engaging with it. So if you have space to be someone who engages with your council member, your ANC rep, like, find ways to get involved in the issues that matter in your neighborhood because your voice might actually be the thing that helps bring it to the next stage of discussion. Whether it's, oh, I actually hear that this is a problem, or, oh, this is a solution you're posing. I think it's possible. Let's talk through that. I think we underestimate our power because we're given the sense that we don't matter because of the way, largely, our government treats us. But instead of allowing our actions to be dictated by how they treat us in a subhuman way, I think we go and we demand respect and accountability.
Yeah,
that was long-winded. I think you're right. But that's it.
No, I think that's beautiful. Katia, do you have any thoughts on the way forward?
You know, Chuck, I think that what we're seeing is the way forward. You know, we have compliance, so I'm not going to, I cannot encourage people. But what I can say is that I am encouraged by what I've seen from these young people, you know, just the way I was encouraged during the George Floyd uprisings, just the way I was encouraged when we saw the anti-occupation movement after the second and the first Iraqi occupations. I mean, you know, what I will say is that sustained action, which is what we are seeing, what is happening right now, is definitely something that is necessary. And we know that lesson from the civil rights movement, right? It wasn't a quick and easy, and it was not easy. This is the thing, and this is the thing these young people understand when they get out in the street, that folks may be brutalized. They may be attacked. Some might lose their lives. Some might be arrested and imprisoned. But this is all the price you pay for liberation. There is no liberation without all of these things, because the state is not going to, and the ruling class, they're not just going to give up and say, okay, you know what? We're going to stop this. We're keeping all of our money here. We're no longer sending weapons, you know, and not just to Palestine. You know, this is all around the world that the United States does this. Look at our complicity in the Congo. Look at our complicity in Rwanda. I mean, the list goes on and on, right? So no one is giving their power and their influence, their access up. So that means that protesters take it. Those that feel compelled to do is shy. And I love the way she said, you know, that's not for everyone. You know, it's not for everyone. Other people can do different things. I do think the whole act locally, think globally thing is a great thing. Find an organization that's doing good work to try to change the paradigm in your community and go from there, you know. But it's going to be a sustained struggle that is in front of us on all of these issues. And it may be, you know, it may be a decade until we really see a world that we want, you know. But I do feel like these young people especially are up for that challenge. And they're very clear. They're very intelligent. They know how to move. And most importantly, they have courage. I just want to say one last thing. I know we're over the break time, but Dr. Bernice Johnson-Regan, who just left us, there's a clip where she talks about becoming an activist. And she says that once I became at peace with death and the fact that what I was doing could get me killed, right, I was okay. I could move, and I was free to move because I was no longer afraid of that one lasting thing. And I'm really paraphrasing. She says it so much more eloquently. But I think it's that level of commitment that we're seeing and that level of commitment that changing the systems that oppress us will take.
Well, that level of commitment by young people is perfectly describes our next guest, who we're going to come back to after the break. All those superlatives that you said, you're all going to hear that in a minute. So let's take a break, and we're going to come back with a wonderful local organizer of Maryland to Palestine. I'm Hannah, and can't wait.
Got to keep on walking, yeah. On the road to Zion.
Yeah. Been waiting through this track with you, man. They know.
I got to keep on walking, yeah. On the road to Zion.
You gotta keep walking, y'all. Yeah, yeah, you gotta keep. Sometimes I can't help but feel helpless. I'm having daymares at daytime, wide awake, try to relate. This can't be happening like I'm in a dream while I'm walking. Cause what I'm seeing is haunting. Human beings like ghosts and zombies. President Mugabe holding guns to innocent bodies. It's
Zimbabwe. They make John Pope seem godly, sacrilegious and blasphemous. In my lifetime, I look back at paths I walked, where savages fought and pastors taught. Prostitutes stomping high heel boots and badges scream at young black children, stop or I will shoot. I look back and cook crack, clutch cars that pass by, Jaguars, mad fly, and I'm guilty for materialism. Blacks are still up in the prison, trust that. So save me your sorries. I'm raising an army, revolutionary warfare with Damian Marley. We're sparking the irons,
marching. And we're back here at WPFW. You see, we haven't really been talking about sports today, and sometimes it calls for that. We had a legendary day in D.C. yesterday. We'll come back to it. There is a ban that's going on about Israel and the Olympics, and we're going to go deep into that into the next couple of weeks as well. But this is the local organizer day, and we have Hannah with Maryland and Palestine, who did not start coming out in October 7th, but, you know, been in the streets for years, not just the protests that are no-brainers like Arrest Netanyahu, but going in locally and challenging the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism and fighting on that behalf and local organizing and unpacking on a level of detail that I've learned so much from. So when Katia is talking about the young people inspiring and committed and giving maybe some of us older folks hope, that is who Hannah is. Hannah, how are you? Great for you to be with us.
Hi, Chuck. It's really great to be here today. It was a really, really long day yesterday, but we have even longer days ahead of us, because we're going to keep fighting so long as Netanyahu's on our soil and so long as this onslaught against Gaza continues.
You know, that's right. And I want to talk about the protests. There was a lot of protests yesterday going into the night, and we were at the Watergate Hotel, third straight night of noise demo. But I think I want to open up because, you know, when I got home, there's this this speech that the American Congress were clapping to 58 times, and I'm what world am I living in? What is your reaction when you hear Netanyahu, but not just Netanyahu, because we know who he is, but American Congress clapping in this way?
Right, and I think I would start first and foremost from the context of being a longtime community organizer in D.C. and also being a law student, watching the U.S. Congress clap as many times as it did for Benjamin Netanyahu was not necessarily the U.S. clapping for Israel, but clapping for itself. Because a lot of people miss this point, which is that many, many years ago, Biden made the statement that if there was no Israel in the Middle East, that the United States would invent an Israel. So the United States was clapping for itself, was clapping for its own imperial interests in the region and for U.S. empire generally. So the United States stands hand in hand with Israel because it is in the United States' best interests in the pursuit of capitalistic power to maintain a stronghold in the Middle East like Israel. And in so much as the United States likes to absolve itself of responsibility by claiming that they are intent on a two-state solution or that they hear the voices of Palestinians in this country, more and more people, especially young people, are not buying into this narrative. We're seeing right through it. And all of the attempts by Democrats specifically to maintain power and to maintain their stronghold in the upcoming election by having Biden step down and have Kamala Harris step in efforts to appease progressives and to make people think that the Biden administration is shifting in some way. We know this is fake, and we know that simply because a black woman is a part of the presidency or running to be president, that doesn't mean that that individual represents us. We know that she stands hand in hand with Zionists and for imperial interests in the Middle East. So seeing the clapping was not surprising to me, but it's truly disgusting. The fact that Benjamin Netanyahu, with an arrest warrant out from the International Court of Justice, is welcomed with open arms in this country. And after the continuous onslaught in Gaza, or even today, there were more raids in residential neighborhoods in Khan Yunis, where people are being bombed and bombarded. and the most barbaric crimes against humanity we've been witnessing over the last 9 months, and the fact that the person responsible, largely responsible for these crimes against humanity, is welcomed with open arms, says a lot about the United States, and it says a lot about their commitment to seeing Israel succeed. But we know, as the people, that they will never truly succeed, and the fact that Palestinians have survived for as long as we have is indicative of that.
It sure is. And you've been doing this for many years. I mean, you're a law student now, and you're
right. You're
a law student now, and I think I want to get to that in a minute, but you've been working with Maryland for Palestine for years. And can you talk about why and what's some of the work you've been doing? And, you know, at a sports show, you even had, I think, a few weeks ago, a soccer tournament that you've been having for years. When you're organizing, what's the way forward from your position?
Yeah, I've been organizing with Maryland to Palestine. I was actually one of the original founders of the group. And this was post-college, when a lot of people who are involved with Palestine organizing in college, there's a space for them because there's a Students for Justice in Palestine. But a lot of times when people graduate, there aren't many organizations for people to continue their organizing. And so locally in Maryland, I noticed there was a very strong lack of spaces that were anti-Zionist, that were pushing towards Palestinian liberation in Maryland. And so we started Maryland to Palestine, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, and we've been doing local work for years. Part of that work was having protests in D.C. and across the DMV whenever there were large-scale aggressions in Palestine, but also holding teach-ins and educational events to try to teach average Americans about what is happening in Palestine and how they are directly complicit by virtue of them paying taxes and, you know, funding what is happening to our people. Another part of this is we have a soccer tournament called our joint soccer tournament with the village of Wadi Fukin in Palestine. This is a village near Jerusalem where the Palestinians locally are fighting land theft by having a soccer field that they use to try to inspire the youth and have a place of refuge for them amidst the constant aggressions by Israeli occupation forces. And so we hold a joint tournament with them every year. And that has been very rewarding. We actually met with the main Palestinian involved with the soccer tournament, who was able to visit the United States. And he was at our tournament this year. So that was very, very special to us. And in addition to, you know, bridging sports with, you know, organizing and protest and movement, we've also held more local campaigns against the IRA definition of anti-Semitism, which you mentioned earlier, Chuck. But that campaign in and of itself describes the power of people acting locally, which is super, super important. We have a lot of national headlines, and those should be given their proper weight. But acting locally makes the most impact. And with that campaign, we tried to fight the implementation of the IRA, or the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is equated with 11 examples, 7 of which say that if you are critical of Israel, then you are anti-Semitic. And so this is a very, very clear markation of trying to stifle free speech, specifically pro-Palestine speech. And so we gathered as a community to fight back against this definition passing in the local county council in Maryland, one of our county councils. And ultimately, after weeks of pushback and getting delays because of community pressure, the bill ultimately passed. But this act of being a watchdog on institutions, on local governments, on national governments, is critically important because those in power think that their power has no limit. And the reality is that the power remains with the people. And we have to show that every single time we show up in person, virtually, in local conversations, in any facet possible to push back.
I'm so glad you talked about the IRA definition. You were the first person that I ever heard really break it down in plain English. And now we're seeing federal acts like the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act that's equating a legitimate critique of Israel with anti-Semitism. So that fight has to continue. Katia Shai, you have any thoughts? So
I think I really appreciate the bringing up of sports and movement. And I think I really want to just quickly make a plug for the inclusion of Go-Go for Gaza in our work is along the same lines of ensuring that people can move through the grief together. It's a very sacred thing to do with your community. So I love that that is a tactic being used by MZ to Palestine as well.
Yeah. Well, you were both at the last night's protest at the Watergate Hotel, the third night. I mean, that was something. The energy was next level.
Crazy.
How did you feel about that, Anna? I mean, it was next level energy. But why is that important? I got people in my timeline saying, well, he's going to put in earplugs. He won't hear it. Well, this is no big deal. I mean, you know, the naysayers. Why is it important that we're out there like that?
It absolutely is a big deal for us to be out there. And I want people to engage in counterfactual thinking here for a moment. Let's say community didn't show up, and let's say the streets were empty. What message are we sending to the Palestinians still stuck under the rubble if we can't do so much as show up and try to disturb this man's peace so long as he's within our borders? What message are we sending if we don't mobilize? If we don't reject the falsehoods that he's claiming in Congress? So it absolutely makes a difference, if not to just show up and make a statement. It makes a world of a difference. And the people of Palestine notice this. They tell us that they see us. They look at the news and they're watching because they know, especially in the heart of empire where we are positioned, that it is critically important for us to consistently show our opposition to the American government's actions, their policies in the Middle East, specifically with respect to Israel, and show that we fully reject Netanyahu parading and having meetings across D.C. with Biden, with Congress, and we have to show that it is absolutely unacceptable. It's our duty. It's our responsibility. So people, a lot of people who say, yeah, this is not going to make a difference. Yeah, they don't show up to the protest anyway, babe. I wasn't expecting you to show up. So, all right, I'm not going to listen to you, but I'm going to listen to my people who want us to show up. Palestinians in the occupied territories are consistently telling us, protest, show up, talk to Congress. And so we heed to that call. Because a lot of times what Israel tries to do is separate Palestinians in the diaspora from Palestinians living under bombardment, under occupation. Mm. And what we need to do is consistently show that we are one voice. There is no separating Palestinians. So we heed to one another's calls in the same way that Palestinians in occupied territories heed to one another's call to protest. They were protesting in the West Bank when they were bombarding Gaza. People who were living under occupation were showing up in the streets to protest the bombings against Gaza. So if people who are occupied can show up in the street, and imagine what difference that's going to make to someone who's occupied, what a protest is going to do. But they do it anyway. So we need to do it anyway, regardless of what quote-unquote minimal impact you think it has. It makes a huge impact. You saw how many police forces were deployed in D.C. yesterday.
Oof.
You saw how many NYPD officers stood in front of us on their little bikes. You saw how many people were pepper sprayed. And that is a reaction because the state is scared. They're scared because people are mobilizing. So mobilizing makes a world of a difference. And for the naysayers saying it doesn't, then you're not really looking.
Yeah. Wow, that was inspiring. And yesterday you told me the police that were really snug, almost up in everyone's face at that event, that they were complicit. Could you elaborate?
Yes, they were absolutely complicit, and they are absolutely aggressive in every sense of the word. It's also an incredible view, and it shows the blatant fascism within this country that the police are there to protect property. They're there to protect the U.S. establishment, and they're there to protect U.S. interests. They're not there to protect the people. And they were pushing up against the crowd, making it less safe for people to stand, and might I add, exercise their constitutionally given right to protest. And that entire show, that entire atmosphere was made unsafe because of the police presence. Community protects community. We're going to make sure our people are okay. But the show of police, they were standing lined up in front of the gates of where Netanyahu was staying at the Watergate Hotel and consistently making it harder for community to take up space in the streets to properly spread out and pushing back against people, pushed us on the sidewalk first and foremost. Then later on, eventually we took the streets and then they stayed next to the gate right in front of the hotel. And so you can tell that this is all a play to them. It's all a show of force for them to exert more of their power, and they don't truly care about the people. But your point about them being complicit, U.S. police forces train directly with Israeli intelligence. These exchange programs have been happening for years, where U.S. police forces, especially the ones who are heads in the police command, will go to Israel, and they will train with the IOF to figure out the highest form of intelligence that they can use on people in the U.S., specifically Black and brown people. So when I was working with public defenders years ago as an investigator, about 2-3 years ago, and I was going through neighborhoods in D.C., Southeast D.C., Southwest D.C., and I saw a police car in every single corner, and I saw new police military technology being used to surveil communities. Poor and low-income communities in D.C., I thought to myself, this is occupation. This is exactly what they do in the occupied territories in Palestine, in Palestine. So there's a huge exchange. The exchange is very evident and clear. They're employing the same tactics of occupation on the American people. And in that way, any member of the U.S. police force is complicit.
Wow. Shai, thank you. Shai, you were at the protest last night. Any additional thoughts?
It's difficult to add on to what feels like a pretty perfect statement of
everything. That's why I passed it to you.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I have to agree that we can't, there's a sense of manufactured consent that our media, our government, and essentially all elements of our lives as Americans are pushing us towards. And so the simple act of saying, no, I'm not comfortable with this, and taking it to the streets or taking it to your book club or whatever, is such a strong and important act of resistance against the imperialist core. Because again, collective liberation means, when we're saying free Palestine, it also refers to the fact that Israeli billionaires are causing exploitation of resources on the continent of Africa. And then they're also seeding issues in other areas, creating proxy wars. Like, it is all connected. So when we show up in the streets for Palestine, we're also showing up for all of the other victims of the imperialist core that is the United States of America.
That's right. Katia?
I think these young people have been so eloquent in what they've said. I'll just say quickly, one of the most disturbing things that Netanyahu said yesterday, I did not watch the speech, I had no intention, but I did read it. And when he says this is a struggle between barbarism and civilization, it just, you know, we have to remember that we as Black people, as brown people, as queer people, as whatever we are that is marginalized, have been referred to in the same terms. So when we are out in the street, we're not only standing up for Palestinian rights and the end to a genocide, we're standing up for ourselves to say that we understand what that looks like and feels like, and we are going to stop it from being perpetrated on anyone else who has been described and marginalized in this manner.
That's right. Absolutely. That is right. Hannah, how can people get involved with this work? You talk about that a lot. Someone's listening here. They want to get more involved. What do they do?
Okay, if you want to get involved, follow MD2Palestine. So that's MD, the number 2, Palestine, on Instagram. We post all of our actions on there. And show up to the events, get to know us. And if
the vibes are right, join the organization. I mean, my main number one advice to people, even if you're not interested in joining Maryland to Palestine specifically, is to find an organization whose values you align with, attend their events, plug in, show up, and join them, because we are way more powerful when we're organizing than when we're sitting in our home scrolling on our phones.
That's right. Sai, how can people get involved?
As someone who very much is an autonomous organizer, I definitely agree. Look out for the groups that are organizing on the ground. I have worked with a group called DC for Ceasefire, and I know that the organizers are tapped into other community groups. So oftentimes, what I love about the space for digital advocacy is that these groups have been using the collaborator function.
Mike is giving us the rep, but get that last note in, Sai.
Look up DC for Ceasefire, look up events in the area, and talk to the people at the events. That's how you're going to build your community, and that is the basis of truly sustainable practice.
Thank you both so much. Really appreciate it. Giving the streets... amplifying the streets right now. Really appreciate it. That's why you're on. You inspire me. You inspire Katia. Let's keep doing it. Let's free Palestine.
Free Palestine. Thank you.
Free Palestine.
Will you be doing that? I'd rather say see ya, because I would never be ya. Be ya officer.
Hello, WPFW. Summertime is here. Words Beats and Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness, featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, The Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, live art installation, hands-on workshop tent, and health and wellness pavilion. Free to the entire community. July 27th on the National Mall. DMV Made Festival. Get more information and RSVP today. WBLINC.org/DMVMade.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture
on the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
Brother to the east.
To the east, my brother, to the east. Come on.
To the east, my brother, to the east.
To the east, my brother, to the east. Yeah.
To the east, my brother, to the east.
To the east, my brother, to the east, my brother.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes.
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of DC communities east of the river on To the East. Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
The Birchmere welcomes Ladysmith Black Mambazo, Tuesday, July 30th. Nelson Mandela titled them South Africa's cultural ambassadors to the world. Details at birchmere.com.
Alba Nidab returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with music memories, the best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alba Nidab on 89.3 WPFW FM, Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Brazilian music is back in its righteous place on WPFW. I'm your host, Roberto, and Berimbau airs on Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. Are you ready to take a trip from Rio Grande do Sul to Amazon and back? That's Berimbau, Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded